Clean up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. It's February 22nd, 2017. We're having a public hearing and public testimony on House Bill 5042, the Oregon Youth Authority. And Mr. Farrow and Joe, you want to, and Mr. Ball, you want to come, and we're going to continue where we left off Monday, or was it yesterday? Yesterday.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Winters and Stark, members of the subcommittee. For the record, Fairbor Spaksuresh, Oregon Youth Authority Director.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Stark, Winters, members of the committee. For the record, Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office.
So we really just have a few budget slides, and then I'll turn it over to Dustin. We did not get through all of them yesterday, so we'll try to finish up fairly quickly to allow time for public testimony. This slide, slide 114, basically highlights the proportion of our general fund compared to other funds and federal funds. And generally, our other funds are smaller than what appears on this. What actually increases that part of the pie is the bond money that we received last biennium, which is about 78% of our other funds. If you take that out, our other fund revenue is fairly small. This other slide just basically breaks down funds other than general fund into federal funds and other funds. Again, you can see that we don't receive a whole lot of federal funds, and again, the increase in other funds is primarily due to our bond revenue. Excuse me. This is our revenue summary, a pretty busy slide, but it basically shows that we receive revenue through Social Security, child support, nutrition program, Q-bonds, Title 19, et cetera. Those are the various sources of revenue that come to OYA. Okay, so basically our revenue summary is there's been just a few changes. Our estimated blended federal Medicaid assistance percentage, or FMAP, has just changed in a very small percentage from 64.3% to 63.55%. We had a slight decline in our random moment sample activities, the hits that we get for the activities that our parole and probation officers do. Our child support revenue has decreased slightly, and that's primarily due to DOJ, the Department of Justice, does the collection of those funds, and that's primarily the reduction due to them not having a dedicated position to pursue that to the extent that they can. Child nutrition program, pretty much stable. Our other fund revenue, Social Security, Supplemental Security, SSI. Again, those are pretty stable through this biennium. So just two more slides. One is the governor's budget reductions for 17-19. Very quickly, and Dustin will talk about this as well, the governor's budget cuts about 160 beds from our residential capacity. It reduces the county funding to JCPN diversion funding to our county partners by 15%, $2.8 million. Joe and I both talked about the impact of that during our testimony. I do want to point out that our county partners have submitted written testimony that highlights the impact of this cut to their programs. I believe you have that, or you will have that. And that's OJJDA, the Juvenile Directors Association, all of the 36 counties in Oregon. We will be closing, based on the governor's budget, one facility in Warrenton, Oregon, the North Coast facility, as we discussed yesterday. That's 50 positions. There will be no youth released to the community. We will absorb those youth into our existing capacity in other facilities. What it will impact is 50 staff in Warrenton who have roots in the local community and will have to either move or find local employment. We will do our best to absorb all of that staff within our workforce. Within a very short period of time, we have to go through a layoff process. But again, my hope is that we can absorb that staff through the attrition that we have in the valley. Our program support, just briefly, to move up one position, security position, to Department of Administrative Services, and a reduction of government service charges and DOJ charges that we receive. And then very briefly on the 15% cuts that we were directed to put together by Legislative Fiscal Office. In addition to the governor's reductions in her budget, which appears on items 2, 1 through 4, on this slide, with one small exception, you can see that the reduction to state assistance to counties increases from $2.8 to $3.6 million. That additional increase is as a result of a 15% cut to Multnomah Gang funding. In the previous cuts, in the governor's budget, the Multnomah Gang money basically does not get reduced, but in this 15% cut, it's basically across all of the money that goes to the counties, which includes the gang funding. It would require the closure of two more close custody facilities, nearly 100 additional positions, about 20 positions in program support, and this reduction will require releasing youth to the community because we don't have capacity to absorb the closure of two additional facilities and about 75 youth. Then finally, we've talked about this in detail during our presentation, Senate Bill 82, which is the OYA bill that codifies our current approach to isolation, but it actually codifies it into the law and specifies that isolation cannot be used as punishment or as a sanction for rule violation in any of our youth correctional facilities. That's pretty much what I had to present, and if there are not any questions, I'll turn it over to Dustin.
Questions? Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, again, Dustin Ball, the Chief Financial Office. And I have a brief presentation today that will give you a high-level overview of the governor's budget as it relates to the Oregon Youth Authority. Okay. So Fair Boards and his team have done a great job of walking you through their agency over the last 2 days and the first 10 minutes today. So I'm going to move fairly quickly through this. If you guys want to stop me, just raise your hand or interrupt me, and I'll dive in a little bit deeper. But the agency really protects the public and reduces crime by holding youth offenders accountable while providing opportunities for reformation in safe environments. They serve youth ages 12 through 24, operate 7 correctional facilities and 4 youth transitional facilities in Oregon, and they manage the state's juvenile parole and probation programs. Emerging issues that we were facing in the governor's budget were services to youth, female youth, and that was detailed in the Secretary of State's audit as well. The 10-year facilities plan, which is, Fair Boards and his team talked a lot about really enhancing and complementing the agency's positive human development approach, as well as continued implementation of the YRS. The guiding priorities in the budget were to ensure that those in the criminal justice system have the best chance to succeed, providing positive outcomes while reducing the pressures on the state correctional system, and reducing recidivism. This next slide is going to give you a brief history of the agency's expenditures over time. On the far left
is this something we've seen before?
Co-chair Winters, I don't know that you've seen this slide before. You, in all of our presentations, we have a similar slide. So when I was here with the Criminal Justice Commission, I provided a slide that was very similar to this. It gives a history.
Maybe that's where I saw it.
Probably. So on the far left is the actual 13-15 budget data. In the middle is the current biennium's legislatively adopted budget. And then on the far right is the governor's budget. And what you see there, that peak in red, is the bond proceeds. And so that is really the bond proceeds that were implemented last biennium, and that's continued this current biennium, or within the governor's budget with additional bond sales. This slide is going to show you the breakout of how the agency's expenditures are divided within the agency. The big blue piece is the cost to operate staff, a lot of the 24/7 facilities. And the other piece I want to point out is the special payments. This is really the community placement beds and the county payments. Investments, or the key investments included in the governor's budget, are really providing for the full funding for the Young Women's Transitional Program at Oak Creek. This is to provide for up to 25 beds. We are updating the rate model for the BRS services, and this is adding three factors into the rate development methodology that will provide for a post-relief factor, provide for staff turnover factor, and provide for additional training of staff. We are also permanently implementing several positions that the agency has administratively established through double fills that really assist in the positive human development and the YRS. This is those skilled development coordinators, a PREA investigator, and a lot of things that have been added onto the agency over time. And this is just truing up the budget to what has actually been going on. And then, again, the breakout of the capital improvements that the agency detailed yesterday. We just talked about these in Fairboards' presentation, the cost savings measures that are included in the governor's budget. The key cost saving measures are really the closure of the facility on the North Coast, reducing the residential beds, bringing the budget more in line with the actual beds, as well as reducing funding to the county programs. And then there were also the standard statewide adjustments, which were adjusting the attorney general rate in budgets, as well as state government service charge and charges for services. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, before we go into our public testimony, if I may just make a quick comment. Many of our partners are here today to testify, but we also have more than 30 written testimony. I just wanted to point out that Chief of Police, current and former judges, district attorneys, public defenders, advocacy groups, last but not least, some of our youth have submitted written testimony, and you either have those or will have them. Thank you.
Can I have them? Molly Rogers and Jeff Mulligan, Dan Golden,
good afternoon, co-chairs Winters and Stark and members of the subcommittee. My name is Molly Rogers, and I'm the director of the Wasco County Department of Youth Services located in the Dalles, Oregon. I'm here to discuss a couple of different things here today. The first is an intergovernmental entity called the Central and Eastern Oregon Juvenile Justice Consortium, fondly known to us as COJAC. It was developed in 1987 with priorities of juvenile justice system focusing on public safety, accountability to victims and communities, as well as skill building and reducing youth's risk to reoffend. These same values were the key components in 1995 when the Oregon juvenile justice system was created with the Oregon Youth Authority. This partnership between COJAC and the Oregon Youth Authority culminates in two separate outcomes and strategies I'd like to share with you today. The first is the co-management of the diversion dollars and the individualized service funds contracted through the Oregon Youth Authority to COJAC. The second highlighted strategy addresses the implementation of the Youth Reformation System and the tools created as part of the developmental unit you heard yesterday. On the first day of OYA's presentation, Deputy Director O'Leary referred to the county juvenile departments as the high-volume workhorses of the juvenile justice system. And we just want to really focus that out of the 2,500 youth that was shared that are formally involved in the juvenile justice system, he's correct, 2,100 of those youth are successfully maintained at our county level. The first strategy Cojack counties took on is they have pooled the diversion funds since the late 1980s to better leverage a finite amount of funding to allow our rural and frontier counties to access services. The plan is created with input from all of the member counties and merged into a diversion plan that's submitted to the state. All monies are targeted to those specific priorities outlined in the plan. To ensure that the funds are targeted, all youth must meet risk and criminal involvement criteria. And through the co-management agreement that we have, we do not exclude any youth who are based on status, whether they're county kids or state kids. They're all our kids. The funding through the Oregon Youth Authority receives at the county level is a key to the rural and frontier counties making and critically maintaining services throughout the Cojack region. I'll not deny that one of those key components is our detention facility, which is the NORCOR Juvenile Detention Facility, made up and serves 17 jurisdiction, including tribal and some Washington counties. This particular facility is supported by two small rural and two frontier counties. The facility provides for four different options to support the juvenile justice system, including pre-adjudication detention, 30-day extended detention, a youth care center, and housing for Measure 11 youth under the age of 18. Yesterday, co-chairs Winter spoke about mapping the gaps in services. Cojack has actively been mapping and working with providers to try to fill those gaps over the last 30 years. One of the service gaps is sex offender treatment for adolescents. That's a current issue that we're having. Over the past decade, the licensing standards have continued to become more restrictive and expensive to attain, leaving a large geographic area without access to services. This is one of the concerns of losing our detention program as well as the diversion funding. Much of our diversion funding goes to paying for sex offender treatments to maintain kids in the community and not sending them to the Oregon Youth Authority for placement outside of their communities, and they can be safely maintained. The developmental unit of the Oregon Youth Authority shared that the committee, the tools that have been created through the Youth Reformation System. Member counties of Cojack were some of the first counties to enter into a pilot project to utilize the tools in our case planning for youth. We completed trainings in multiple sites throughout the region. And after Wasco County's experience, the first tool that became very useful to us was the typology. We trained not only our staff, but our local community members. And this became a common foundation for us to refer to mental health without and drug and alcohol services and made the process much more streamlined. The second tool that's become increasingly important to us is the predictive success rate tools. One of the values that Cojack shares with OYA is right youth in the right place at the right time. Before the tools we had available to us, we had a pretty good sense of making the right placement recommendations, but we couldn't really articulate the why we made those recommendations. Since we started using the tools, we're interviewing with the youth earlier, the right youth earlier, and matching services to their needs. Our experience in Wasco County has been actually amazing. We've implemented a collaborative decision team we refer to as the community partnership team meeting. The team includes all the key players: DHS, education, mental health, physical health, community support providers, OYA, attorneys, both defense and DA, juvenile justice, and any other support that the youth or the family decides is important. Wasco County has been 5 years into implementing a trauma-informed strategy, and this has been a tool we've been able to use that and put trauma-informed services in our juvenile justice system. Let me share a quick scenario. Joey is a 15-year-old youth.
If I give you all the time, then I won't get the other 15.
Okay. I can wrap it up if you'd like me to, or you can have
Thank
a scenario.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Hello. Co-chairs Winters and Stark and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Milligan. I work with a consortium. I did have some handouts. I don't know if you have them or not, but
can you hand them out now?
You can.
Yeah, the reason I want to do it is that there's a little map in there that just to get a sense that the consortium's area is over 61,000 square miles. And some of these counties have to drive 2 or 3 hours just to get to a Starbucks. That's rural. Sorry. What we wanted, the county map is showing here. It's kind of a Carhartt brown map here. Was supposed the colors changed by the printer, and the date is wrong. Should be February 21st. I use some dictation software, and it likes to change things. You have to be really careful when you do that. And there's a couple other errors, but. What I really wanted to say is the development of the risk tools that OYA has done is really transforming the work of juvenile departments like Molly introduced, really making sure, and particularly for the rural counties with very limited resources, it really helps us focus on the youth most likely to continue with problems and go on into the youth authority. It really targets very limited dollars. In the meeting on Monday, Herbors talked about the important role of counties. Molly mentioned it as well, as managing around 90% of the youth population, ranging from kids that make dumb decisions all the way up to kids that present a real criminal risk to the community. But he mentioned the idea of this hydraulic effect, and I want to make sure that you got that, is although these sometimes are called grant monies, it's actually monies that OYA and the counties plan for to really target the youth who are at risk of coming to the youth authority. They're targeted to reduce commitments to the youth authority. And as much as counties can do to hold that back reduces the need for OYA. And if you reduce any part of that, if you reduce the county's ability, then judges will place kids where the resources are, which is in the youth authority. Likewise, if youth authority gets reduced, the hydraulics will push back and the community will be asked to manage youth who really ought to be managed in a secure facility. So be aware as you look at funding levels that that's a hydraulic effect. You can't just say, well, kids will just stop getting in trouble. That doesn't work. And the other thing that you've talked about, I think, is a reduction in referrals that we've seen all over. And although the referrals are down, the complexity and the multiple service needs of these kids is increased. Just in our rural region, 76% of the youth from the region, 76% who have been committed to youth authority have documented co-occurring alcohol, drug, and mental health diagnoses. I mean, people who are working with these youth know what I'm talking about. 76% of parents have documented histories of alcohol drug use, and somewhere between 70 and 90% of youth that have been referred to the juvenile departments have a history of drug and alcohol problems. So drug and alcohol is a serious problem underneath everything else. So even though the referral rates have dropped, the level and intensity of the cases has increased, and I think both the director and deputy director talked about the dynamics of that. So, and again, in rural communities, there's very limited services. And so that's important. I would just like to end, since time is of the essence, is that we really want the consortium, the 17-county consortium, and actually Mike MacArthur in the audience was an early county commissioner member as Judge MacArthur from Sherman County that was really helpful in helping to put together this intergovernmental relationship among counties, among county boards of commissioners, and us to help manage services by combining them and manage them in a pool where small counties couldn't afford any of these by themselves, but in the pool they can access high-intensity services and can get them available. But I just, again, like to thank OYA for understanding the unique resources of rural counties that are different from urban counties. Really balancing resource development with us.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you. I just want to get on the record. I brought up the other day to Forbos and Joe the financial challenges around NORCOR and the COJAC model. And so I want all of you guys to work with the committee to figure out what direction we need to take to figure out the challenges.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My chair.
well without it.
Thank you, co-chairs. I'm Dan Golden, director, Klamath County Juvenile Department, and I took that 500-mile round trip to come in and just give you very brief testimony in support of the Oregon Youth Authority, one of our primary partners in delivering our services in the juvenile justice system. I just have very, very brief points to make. First, regarding the basic and diversion service dollars that are at stake, those are dollars that in Klamath County we use to support a probation officer who manages high-risk caseload kids who otherwise would, you know, simply be heading over into the Oregon Youth Authority, committed to the Youth Authority. If we have to get up in front of our juvenile court this next year and say, hey, you know, we lost that position, we can't manage those kids are going to be committed to the Youth Authority. And instead of the 50 kids that Klamath County currently has managed by the Youth Authority, over the next 2 years, you're going to see an increase of probably 20 to 30 kids coming into the state system that we could otherwise manage at Klamath County, at the Klamath County level. So, you know, the funding of those dollars is essential to the delivery of those services at the county level so that we can deal with some of those cases there. Secondly, the need to maintain and or even increase the BRS system beds. I know there have been a number of important programs throughout Oregon that have closed in the last several years, and that is leading to, you know, the governor's budget request 160, 170 beds, something like that, reduction. What I'm pleading to you to consider is restoring at least some beds so that the Oregon Youth Authority doesn't find itself in a straitjacket in the next couple of years where when they might be able to develop a new program, you know, to respond to some critical need, they'll just simply not have those beds available. And we do operate an intensive care level 5 BRS program in Klamath County, networked with the Youth Authority. And so, you know, we really feel like this is an important area for the Oregon legislature to consider. And then finally, just the need, you know, to continue to fund the evolution of the JAGIS system. You know, state of Oregon doesn't have a whole lot of successful projects out there in the data system development area to point to, but JAGIS is probably one of the best. This is the data system that knits together all of the different juvenile justice entities in the state of Oregon. In our BRS Level 5 program for girls, we receive referrals through the JAGIS system. We respond. We do case management through the JAGIS system. You know, when the POs in other parts of the state, literally hundreds of miles away, have inquiries about their kids that are in our program, it all can go through JAGIS. They can review service notes. It is a very high-level functioning system, and yet it's 20 years old, and it's going to need to continue to be developed and modernized. So whatever we can do to continue that process, you know, makes the whole system much more efficient, and then we can deliver services all over the state. So thank you very much. I'll be available for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Dr. Randy Butler and Judge Richard, I'm going to mutilate the name, Machado, and I hope I didn't.
Menchaca.
Okay. Menchaca.
I'm used to it.
I know that you're on schedule and that you need to have your testimony, so I'm honoring your time.
Thank you. Co-Chair Winters and Co-Chair Stark and members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. My name is Dr. Randy R. Butler. I am the senior pastor at the Salem Evangelical Church. I am a volunteer for the Oregon Youth Authority. The bottom line for your budget considerations as related to OYA consists of names and faces of children who need our help as Oregonians. OYA's philosophy, practices, policies, and procedures reflect a philosophy of PhD or positive human development. With this philosophy in place, OYA treat boys and girls not as animals, but human beings. I lead a community group on Tuesdays and a trauma group every Saturday. I attend MDTs, which are placement assessment meetings with the boys. I counsel, encourage, and coach these boys every week. For some, I am their religious contact around the state of Oregon, receiving phone calls from time to time. I receive and send correspondence with these boys regularly. I hold them. I cry with them. I laugh with them. I play with them. I believe in them. And I learn from them. These children come oftentimes from families that are broken, dysfunctional, and absolutely unable to gain an upper hand in life. OYA have some of the most talented, gifted, caring, competent employees I have ever witnessed in an organization, from the director all the way down to those who work in the kitchen. And yes, I work with those in the kitchen in the summer and fall, cutting up apples from my trees with the boys to make homemade applesauce. The OYA employees I work with are professional, and they are very well trained, leading these children towards rehabilitation and a better life upon their release. I am at Hillcrest up to three times a week. As an Oregonian, I am invested in these boys' lives. I give them my very best. Will you? I have nothing to gain from your financial decisions, but we do have something to lose if you make further cuts and ignore requests by the director that are not granted. I am a fiscal conservative and understand the dilemma and pressures you face. However, we are not talking about funding animal shelters and the quality of dog food that should be funded. And there is a difference between animals and these children. We are talking about human beings who have names and faces and are receiving real help and treatment and healing from some of the most amazing people this state employs. I beg you to have the fortitude to fund OYA with everything they request, because we who live with these children on the inside see their potential with proper treatment as human beings. This is at the core of what is meant by positive human development. I will pray your funding for OYA will reflect your humanity on behalf of children who have no voice at all. Thank you for the privilege that you gave me to testify. With deep respect, Dr. Randy R. Butler, Senior Pastor, Salem Evangelical Church. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Rick Menchaca. I'm the presiding juvenile court judge in Washington County. I've been the judge there, the presiding judge, for about 3.5 years. I'm not here as a judge. I'm not here as a member of the Oregon Judicial Department. I am an elected official, but even prior to becoming an elected official, a judge, I worked in juvenile law, particularly in Washington and Multnomah County. I am here to ask that the current funding for OA not be slashed in any way, and I'm here in support of 5042, as the doctor pointed out, as a human being. I wouldn't be here if I didn't very, very much care about the mission of OYA. One of the hardest decisions I have to make on the bench on a day-to-day basis, and keep in mind this is what I do. I do juvenile law 24/7. I don't take any other cases. The hardest decision for me sometimes is whether to commit a young man or a young lady to the Oregon Youth Authority for a substantial amount of time. But what I've learned, particularly in my time on the bench, is that when you send these kids to OYA, we are not warehousing them. We are not locking them up. We are making them, hopefully, better people. The crimes that they come in with, the crimes that they're committed on, range from low-level drug abuse charges to very high-level serious sex abuse cases. And what I have found in 3.5 years on the bench, 13 years as a lawyer, what I have found is that OYA rehabilitates these youth. Do we have failures? Absolutely. But I will say, by and large, our success rate at OYA is huge. I've been to OYA myself. I've toured it. I've traveled with Faribours. We have made a commitment to these young people by committing them locked up to make them better people, and we do. OYA has a high school. OYA has job training programs, culinary programs, bike repair programs. We're not warehousing these kids. We're trying to make them better people so they don't end up across the street, as I say, in the adult system. Particularly, we are dealing right now in our climate and our current culture with kids that bring a different milieu of problems. There are gender-specific issues. There are LGBT issues that we've never had to face in the past. And I think all of these things combined make OIA challenge going forward particularly high. And so I ask of you, as the doctor did and several people before me, not to cut their funding. I also ask that the funding, the grants through the juvenile departments, particularly the juvenile departments in the counties that I work with. I work with Washington County. I know the OIA's work with Washington County in particular. OIA would not work without the support of Washington County, so those grants are relied upon. Things like Oak Creek are very important. And I just want it to be known today that we're not warehousing these youth. We're not locking them up to keep them away from the community so much as we are to rehabilitate them so they don't end up across the street. As he pointed out, we are not talking about the quality of dog food. We're talking about our most precious resource in the world, which is children. And OIA, I think, is a mission that deserves to be funded at its current level, and I beg of you not to cut any other programs. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jennifer Williamson, please.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Winter and Stark. It's good to be back in this hearing room. I miss it quite a bit. My name is Jennifer Williamson. I'm the state representative for House District 36. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 5042, the Oregon Youth Authority budget. As many of you know, I was the former co-chair of this committee, and I was incredibly fortunate to watch the development of the Oregon Youth Authority since 2013 when I first came to this committee. I have been so impressed with the leadership of this agency and the work that they've done both to most effectively spend our taxpayer dollars and improve the lives, always focused on improving the lives of the young people in their care. In 2013, the Youth Reformation System was put in place, and this system has been using data collected by the Juvenile Justice Information System to identify the best placement, treatment, and services for youth offenders. I think, again, it's a testament to the leadership of OIA and their willingness to be innovative and to operate effectively for both taxpayers and for the youth in their care and custody. The other big initiative that I've been lucky enough to watch was their 10-year facilities plan, which has set OIA on a path of updating its facilities. If you've gone to some of their old facilities and seen their plans, there's a huge difference in the way that the physical space will look, and it will be a much better situation for the youth in their care. The update of this facility of the facilities is so important, not only for the youth, but also for the professional staff and their ability to treat these young people in an appropriate way at each facility. OIA has there's some budget items in their budget that I want to call out particularly that I want to support. Permanent positions in several critical departments, a rate increase for community residential providers, funding for grants that pass on to partner organizations in county juvenile departments, and the second installment of funding for the facilities strategic plan I just spoke about. But near and dear to my heart, and the program I want to talk most about, is the Young Women's Transition Program at Oak Creek in the campus in Albany. Since November 2015, when this program was opened, 48 young women have received services at this program. And, you know, the Young Women's Transition Program serves some of the most traumatized kids in our state. And these young women that are there, the facility is set up in a way that they could run away. And that rarely happens. And as compared to other treatment facilities for young women, it never happens. So they're doing such a great job at keeping these girls there and taking care of them and helping them transition. They've developed a great partnership with Lynn Benton Community College for education and vocational training, so these young women have opportunities, including a completion of a new welding program. They created a partnership with Portland Community College. PCC is teaching college courses at the program. And they also work with youth who are being paroled in Portland to make sure that they are ready to go getting college set up and employment set up for when they're released. Young women who were previously being paroled directly now have opportunities in a work release program in supportive, supervised, step-down environments so that they can secure secure work once they are released, and that they have a better step-down transition program for these young women. So I just was here this afternoon to lend my support to this budget and particularly this program. It's a really amazing program, and with that, I urge you a full funding of their budget request.
Are there any questions of Representative Williamson? You can let her get off without any
questions.
That's easy.
Excellent. Thank you all.
Arndt, Stevens, and Mayor.
Good afternoon. My name is Janet Ahrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, and we appreciate Co-Chairs Winters and Stark hosting this opportunity for public input. The Alliance has 14 members who have contracts with the Oregon Youth Authority, providing a range of different kinds of services, predominantly in behavioral rehabilitation. The youth that are in BRS programs have faced significant traumatic events in their lives. I certainly know that Senator Winters is aware of that, and Senator Hayward, I might as well name the rest of you, the ACEs, the Average Childhood Experiences, and what kind of an impact that measurement or that study has in understanding who these youth are, what's happened to them, and what they need. So the long and the short of it is there are 10 adverse childhood experiences. If you have had four or more of those, then that tips you over into a situation where you're going to start facing both social ills, physical ills, and ultimately early death. So some of the issues that they might face when you first start to see these juveniles is dropping out of school, smoking, addiction, and other criminogenic behaviors that we would expect. The Alliance conducted an ACE study also. We have about 100,000 kids whose lives we touch every year, and so we were able to take a pretty good look at the youth across the systems, and in particularly in BRS. So if you take a look at the percentage of children in these systems, the BRS residential program, 70% of those youth have had four or more of these experiences. The total BRS program with all of the programs included together, not just the residential, is 74%, and that's a little bit higher because we know that the kids who are in Proctor Care have some of the most significant issues and are represented with the highest scores. Behavior, learning, and help are the three areas where kids are most affected by trauma. So, and this is going to sound very, very familiar. So you're going to see youth who lack impulse control. They have the inability to be able to think through consequences. They don't look into the future. And so not only do they not understand consequences, they also don't see hope. They don't have a vision. They don't have a plan for themselves. They don't know why they would want to finish school. They have unpredictable, oppositional, volatile behavior, and some of the high-risk behaviors that they engage in include self-harm. And for those in the ACE study who have fours or higher and scores of, I hate to call them scores and experiences, you're now looking at a 1,200% increase in the likelihood that they're going to end up with a suicide. So very, very significant, very, very serious issues for these youth. So not only are they challenged in their lives, but we're also challenged for providing the care for them that they need. We want to reduce recidivism, we want them to finish school, we want job readiness, we want them positive youth development, we want strong interpersonal relationships, all the kinds of things that you would think would be fundamental for any young person who's trying to finish school and launch onto a life of their own. So you've been hearing some folks mentioning our friends in Klamath Falls and Representative Williamson and others about how important the funding for the BRS rate is. It's particularly important because three state agencies, including the Oregon Youth Authority, providers, youth, advocates, CCOs, and others, spent 16 months meeting twice a month to take a look at access, and you already heard today, right kid, right place, right time, how important that is, to talk about program standards, what can we do different, are we missing opportunities to open different kinds of programs or shift our focus around to those kinds of strategies that would get better outcomes for kids, and then also we looked at rates and methodologies, and the long and the short of it is that the agreement of the group at the end of all of that work and all of that time was that there exists a 30% gap between the cost of delivering the service and what the rate actually covers. So as you can imagine, we would love to see that governor's request and request from the Oregon Youth Authority and also from the Department of Human Services, who is in partnership with us, who have all prioritized trying to get that rate up. So, and the comment about losing providers is very true. In the last 48 months, 23 of them have given back their contracts. None of these are folks who've been in trouble with licensing or investigations. These are people who, basically, because of the three R's, rates, regulatory oversight, and risk, cannot address that combination of impact on their organizations and continue to work. And remember, these are community members who are the director or who are the leaders for these boards. So it's advocates and parents and it's business leaders and other folks who are saying we can't do this anymore.
Sorry, can you answer for me of the 23 that have given back their license? What was that total number of beds?
They didn't give back their license. They gave back their contracts.
Their contracts.
And it's about 284. Two of those just came back. Catholic Community Services just about a week ago. So we have their beds to add as well.
So you've got the Catholic Community Services that just did not. Did they give back the contract or not renew the contract?
They did two. And I believe it was 16 beds. So added to the 284 total over 4 years. Any other questions for me?
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
No, I was just reminded that's across the entire system.
Correct.
That includes DHS and OIA.
Thank you. Yes, it does.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Quick comment. Bring up speed on sanctuary model ACEs and trauma-informed care. Either on the 16th or the 23rd, the Early Childhood and Family Support Committee is going to have an informational hearing on that.
Thank you very much for letting me know.
Thank you.
Oh, and these are two members of the Alliance, and they'd like to tell a little bit about their organizations.
Co-chairs Winters and Stark, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Francis Marr. I'd like to begin by thanking Senator Steiner Hayward for your representation of the Fighting 17th, home of St. Mary's Home for Boys. And quite literally across the street is District 28. Thank you, Representative Barker, for your strong, longtime support. It is truly appreciated.
Thank you.
My colleague covered much of the ground we should have conferred prior to this on her testimony, so I'll be exceedingly brief. It was about this time last, in 2015, we were talking about the ACEs study. I have a handout for you that you could reference at your leisure. In short, the boys at St. Mary's Home for Boys average a 6.1 with a MODE of 8. So we literally are talking about the tip of the spear for the 20% of the population that will consume 80% of the healthcare dollars down the road. I think that that really brings home for me in a material way the acuity of their treatment needs and unaddressed trauma issues that are absolutely crucial in ameliorating root causes. In December of 2015, concurrent to the last session, we were wrapping up an unprecedented joint review with the Oregon Health Authority, Department of Human Services, and the Oregon Youth Authority of the BRS system, taking a look at eligibility, system design, and rate methodology. That really can boil down to consensus, unanimity, if you will, on a system that is culturally sensitive, gender responsive, trauma-informed, and developmentally appropriate. You have before you policy option packages that will reflect the resourcing of that chronically underfunded system over the last decades, and I hope that you join us in that support. I'd just like to close by saying what an authentic relationship it is with the Oregon Youth Authority. They've been a highly effective community-based treatment provider. Their initiatives related to youth reformation system, positive human development, and the young women's treatment programs, I think, are three examples of evidence-based investment opportunities. And in short, their leadership and resourcing priorities are wholly synergistic with the treatment providers on addressing and ameliorating the root causes of juvenile delinquency. Thank you.
Yes, you will. Go ahead. Good afternoon, everyone. I made a decision to come this morning, so I'm going to speak off the top of my head. My name's Dixie Stevens. I'm the Chief Program Officer for Morrison Child and Family Services. We're located in Portland, Oregon. We have lots and lots of different programs. We have programs for little kids, teenagers, substance abuse, and a long-standing relationship with Oregon Youth Authority. So that giving back of beds, if I would have been here 2 years ago, I would have said we had three programs. We have two programs. We gave back girl beds 2 years ago. We were a 50-bed secured residential treatment program named Rosemont that had been around for 112 years. And we tried everything to keep that open and to live within the budget that we had. So we downsized from 50 girls to 25 girls, and over a five-year span, we lost money. We changed what we did. We downsized. We cut corners. We did everything we possibly could, and we made a decision to close. And that didn't come easy for us. I mean, you got a program that's got 112-year history. You know, that was not an easy decision. And we took a lot of flack for that from Oregon Youth Authority, who ultimately worked, you've left, but who've worked so closely with us to try to make it survive, Department of Human Services, and we even heard the legislature said, like, why did you close? We closed because we couldn't do it. We have two programs right now. We have Breakthrough, it's a substance abuse treatment program for boys, and we have Counterpoint, which is a sex offender treatment program for boys also. They've been in business for about 30 years. We're really hoping we can keep them open, and I can tell you right now, Breakthrough's on our watch list. This budget is really important to us. If there's not a change for us fiscally, Breakthrough is on our watch list, and as much as we value this program, we see the outcomes, we know who the stories of the kids are, we're not going to be able to keep doing this. So we really support the Oregon Youth Authority budget. We support the work that went in to determine what is a livable rate for a program. And none of us are, we're not getting fat on this. You know, these are pretty bare bones, you know, budgets that we live with and we live really carefully within. So I'm here to support the Oregon Youth Authority budget, and I thank you for your time.
Questions? I just have one. Was it a combination of rates and regulations or just purely rates?
That all is so intertwined. The regulations are, you know, pretty intensive, too. It takes a lot of work to keep up with all the regulations with the rates.
Thank you.
What are they doing with that building now?
With the building, we are still using that building. We actually were able to get an Oregon Health Authority funded 12-bed for girls, victims of sexual trafficking. We have that in there, and we have some other services in there, too. So.
And that's one on Kirby, isn't it?
You know, we moved from Kirby to Mount Scott area.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
well,
Kirby is Kirby's the roots, though. You're talking the roots.
Kirby's the old one.
Yeah, that's the
it's
old
now, one. It's now an apartment condos.
Yeah, they got fixed up. It was falling apart around us, and so we moved out.
How long since some people from northeast Portland's been around? Never mind. Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Frederick.
This is, I guess, belated, but I really want to say that that the program for the young women was really an effective program as well. And it's incredibly sad to know that it's not there. It's sad, and it's also, it really diminishes what we have as a possibility for some of the folks, some of the kids that you went through that program.
And we were one of two or three programs that closed that same year for girls. The services for girls were decimated about the same time. So thank you, though. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone.
Tori Lynn, Mike Arthur, and Pam Patton.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, Winters, and Stark. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Tori Lynn, and I'm the director for the Linn County Juvenile Department in Albany, Oregon. I'm also the current president of the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. You have been provided some written testimony, but there's some additional comments I'd like to make today for you. You've heard over the last several days presentations by the Oregon Youth Authority and the great work that our partners are doing with youth that they have in their care. The tools that they've developed for our juvenile system and the real and potential impacts that they have on reducing recidivism, which is something that we're all striving for. You've also heard about the Juvenile Justice Information System, which allows us to use data from thousands of youth that are entered across the state. And you heard from Director Golden the importance of that interconnectedness between all of the county juvenile departments and the youth authority. That system starts at the county juvenile department level, and county juvenile departments are the ones that begin entering data on the youth that really build the system up to be able to provide the richness and data that we're able to use and the youth authority are able to use to develop the tools that have helped us all be more successful in the way that we work with youth. Today, really want to highlight a little bit around the basic and diversion reductions in the governor's budget. County juvenile departments received over 12,000 referrals for youth in 2015. Over 7,700 of those referrals were for criminal offenses. Over 2,700 youth were adjudicated delinquent, with 2,200 of those youth being placed on formal county supervision. We had 486 youth that were committed to the Oregon Youth Authority, and it was a pretty even split between residential treatment and youth correction facilities. Simple math shows that about 94% of youth referred to the juvenile system in 2015 for criminal referrals were handled by the county juvenile departments, either on an informal level or on formal county probation. The diversion and basic service dollars in the governor's budget are slated to be reduced by 15%. These funds are quilted together with county general funds and other funding sources to provide necessary services that we all need to divert youth from further penetration into the juvenile system and into that deeper end of the system. These funds help provide county juvenile departments with adequate detention beds, substance abuse, sex offender treatment, mental health trauma-informed treatment, victim services, community service, restitution programs, along with gender and culturally specific programming. You could be thinking that 15% isn't that big of a cut, or that these funds, county grants, that they might be expendable. These monies provide support for the basic infrastructure for the front end of the juvenile justice system. These monies are the juvenile version of the justice reinvestment work being done on the side, although on a much smaller scale. You've heard a couple comments around the hydraulics of the system, and if you're taking disproportionate cuts on one side, it's going to push more youth into the other end of the system. These funding streams are essential to maintain youth in our community. Along with the cuts to OIA, county juvenile departments are also looking at the Youth Development Council is proposing 17% cut to juvenile crime prevention funds. As we calculate that, it's looking more like about 20%. As we all know, federal forest dollars are not being extended, and those have played an important role for many counties with their public safety strategies. Counties also have similar issues with the rising costs of PERS and health insurance, and so as we're preparing our own county budgets, there's great potential for additional reductions there. So as we look at the larger picture of funding for county juvenile departments, it'll be much larger than just the 15% reduction to basic and diversion services. The juvenile department directors would ask your consideration in fully funding basic service and diversion dollars to the counties and not support a de-investment in the juvenile system. Thank you.
Co-Chair Winters and Co-Chair Stark and members of the committee, my name is Pam Patton, and for 22 years I have led the Coalition of Advocates for Equal Access for Girls. The Coalition is a statewide, all-volunteer, nonprofit organization with a mission to ensure that the Equal Access Law that was passed in the legislature in 1993 is consistently implemented. The law requires that all state agencies, such as Oregon Youth Authority, ensure equity for girls in access to gender-specific services, treatment, and facilities. I'm here today in support of the governor's budget for the ADVAC package for the Young Women's Transition Program that's in Albany, which you have heard about several times. I have been active with the Oregon Youth Authority on the advisory committee for 15, 16 years. I sat on any Oregon Youth Authority Young Women's Work Group since 1996. And as representing the coalition and a commitment to services to girls. Two of the accomplishments that our work groups had, I wanted to tell you about because they're connected with the young women's programs. In March of 1999, OIA opened after we had a two-year work group designing a program, opened the first and only young women's transition program. It was called the Corvallis House. In the second one that we did was in February of 2008. We worked 4 years to get that to happen. We opened the Oak Creek Youth Correctional Facility for Young Women. We were very excited about having programs that were designed specifically for young women. However, in 2009, the Corvallis House had incredible, expensive repairs and renovations that were going to need to happen. So they closed the Corvallis House, and they moved all the girls from the transition program to Oak Creek. They, fortunately, this is a year that we had some capital funds that were given to our state. So there was a young women's transition program facility built right outside of Oak Creek. However, unfortunately, and this was the 2008 crisis, financial crisis that we had in all over, but also in Oregon, and they couldn't fund the staff of the program. So from 2009 to 2015, that program stayed empty, and the girls were in, the transition program was run out of a closed facility inside, which is not a transition program for girls. You heard a little bit about who the girls are from Representative Williamson. The Young Women's Transition Program is specifically designed for young women. It is to provide them with the educational, vocational, and career-oriented supports that they need, but also the treatment and support the skills that they need to be able to successfully transition out of the program and deal with the difficult and challenging transition that happens for them when they go back to their communities. Thanks to OYA's leadership and commitment to all the youth in OYA, actually in, I think it was last November, 2015, they opened the Young Women's Transition Program as a pilot. And unfortunately, a pilot doesn't consistently keep either the staff or the program going for the girls. So one of the things that I think you heard about is that in 2016, the Secretary of State's office did an audit for OYA, and they proposed that OYA work with the legislature to seek ongoing funding to operate the Young Women's Transition Program beyond the pilot period and ensure adequate community services for female youth. And they basically said that OYA is falling short of those of available transition services for girls, basically inequitable services for girls, because boys have three transition programs and girls have one that is a pilot, which could be gone as soon as we start this new program. So I strongly encourage you to fund permanently the Young Women's Transition Program, and I thank you for your consideration.
Mike.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties, Executive Director. I'm here in support of the Youth Authority budget and in support of the department. We appreciate the strong partnership that exists between the counties and our juvenile departments and the Youth Authority. The Youth Authority has strengthened the treatment programs and work to provide accountability and successful training for services to youth. I'd like to extend my personal thanks to Director Ferboras and Joe O'Leary, Deputy Director, for their partnership and their willing to work with the counties. We've had some difficult issues that we've worked through over the past, but it's always been a very strong partnership and hope that continues. They work strongly with all of our counties. As you know, counties are required by statute to provide a juvenile department and a juvenile director. And county elected in Sherman County, I was the county judge, and that involved having juvenile jurisdiction. So I heard cases there that where youth were alleged to have committed an act which, if committed by an adult, would have been considered a crime. But that's not the way our law reads in Oregon. We try and rehabilitate our youth. I also heard cases where a child's circumstances were such that they were in danger, their health and welfare was in danger, and those are the dependency side of the matter as well. But there I saw how Youth Authority worked, and when we were unable to deal locally with a youth and their problems, the last resort was the Youth Authority, and invariably that youth was put into the appropriate programs that would help them turn around their life. AOC continues to support all the mission and goals of the agency as they work towards programs that better serve our youth. We have concerns about the current budget. In light of the state's fiscal situation, understand how tough it is. The proposed cuts in the Youth Authority's juvenile crime prevention and diversion dollars would be a real setback to strong programs that are existing out there now. You heard about NORCOR earlier. The commissioners there are facing a very tough fiscal situation, may have to close a facility serving 17 rural Oregon counties with strong programs, not just a place to put kids. We're also concerned about what happens in those counties that were dependent on federal timber revenues, like Representative Stark's. Those counties are going to have a very tough time maintaining any kind of programs given the cutbacks that they're facing physically. The cuts in combination with other proposed cuts in the public safety system are really going to be painful. And I think that it's a disinvestment that we should consider carefully as you look at where you can put what little bit of resources you've got. I think you have to look at where the best bang for the buck is, where's the best investment is. And working in the youth system is obviously working very far upstream. And those kids, if we can correct their behaviors as youth, then they don't advance to the adult system, which is much more expensive. So that's why these investments are so important. So we'll continue to work with you as legislators on these issues and others, and hope that other key stakeholders will make sure that we can do what we can to help the youth in Oregon continue to move in the right direction. Thank you for your consideration.
You. Elizabeth Kushwa and Lynn Schroeder and Joe Baser, and I think size. And then I would also, when you complete, I would like to have Fairbrothers do a wrap-up for us. So.
Good afternoon, Chair Winters, Chair Stark, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa. I'm the Strategic Director with Children First for Oregon. We're the primary research source for child well-being in Oregon. In 2016, we put out a series of research white papers looking at crime escalation, recidivism, mental health and addictions, and racial disparities in juvenile justice in Oregon. We worked with our researcher, senior researcher Bilotti from OIA, and Deputy Director O'Leary in a refreshingly transparent and collaborative way, which I'm sure you might maybe suspect is not always the case with an agency, and we appreciated that quite a lot. We discovered that a one-size-fits-all approach does not work in juvenile justice, and that the individual approach that is being used at OYA is the most effective approach, and it's a measurable approach. You are all in the unenviable position of trying to decide how to allocate limited funds. Focusing on evidence-based practices is one way to look at that. And in that, OIA is at the head of the pack nationally. Another way is to say that investments in children are those that garner the greatest returns. And if we want these youth, and by extension our entire state, to be safe, to be economically secure, to be educated, and to be healthy, we encourage you to look for the additional resources to make the investment in the OIA budget and the policy packages, as well in all of the other programs and policies and services in every area of the budget that are essential to making Oregon the best place to be a kid. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Winters and Stark and committee members. I'm happy to be here today. My name is Lynn Schroeder, and I'm the director for the Washington County Juvenile Department. And I also want to talk about the importance of the basic and diversion dollars that come to counties through OYA. You've heard a lot about the Youth Reformation System and how OYA is working really hard to get the right services to youth in the right place, and that some youth are served better at the county level and some in residential or correctional facilities. Washington County has been working very closely with OYA in this process as we make those determinations and recommendations. And Washington County also continues the same process on a local level. We look at youth's risk and need level to determine what level of supervision they need and what treatment resources they should get. Youth who are high risk receive multiple contacts a week from our staff to support them to stay in school. First get reengaged in school, then stay in school to help them disassociate from other delinquent peers and engage in pro-social activities, and to make sure they're engaged in the treatment that they're involved in. Our staff are also trained to provide one-on-one cognitive behavioral interventions with the youth. And what they do with youth is every week they're doing skill building to help them address their impulses so they can control them and not get into trouble, to help them be able to start developing some life goals and create positive life in the community for themselves. And we couldn't do this without the basic and diversion funds that come to the county. In Washington County, it helps pay for the staff that provide some of this work with youth. And truly, these basic and diversion dollars are a reinvestment in local work for our youth that is highly effective. In fact, in Washington County, the youth that we worked with in 2015, 78% of them did not reoffend in the following year, 2016. And we did this by staying 25% under our OYA bed allocation that is given to counties based on their population and the crime rate. So it truly does work. It's a reinvestment that works. And certainly if we didn't have this funding or if it's reduced, there's going to be more youth referred to the OYA system. So I urge you to think about, I know you have difficult choices, but how to keep this funding whole. Thank you.
You're going to wrap it up, Joe.
Yes, ma'am. Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I represent Oregon AFSCME. AFSCME represents about 85 or so members who work at Oregon Youth Authority in the parole and probation department area. A lot of our members work in public safety, and they are by their nature very difficult jobs. You're dealing with populations that are, you know, obviously hard to deal with, and our relationship at OIA is a true partnership. You know, the data-driven work they've been doing, the 10-year long-term planning, it's some really innovative work, and it's our folks have asked me to come to testify in favor of the budget and give our full throated support for the hard work that's been happening at OIA. And it's kind of obviously a breath of fresh air with dealing with a lot of the public safety agencies. No offense to the other ones. Let me a little bit. I don't want to keep you too long, but I just thank you so much, and I really appreciate the hard work that the agency has been doing. I wanted to voice that. So, thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Director Fairbrows and Joe and Ball.
Co-Chairs Winters and Stark, members of the subcommittee, thank you for tolerating us for the last 3 days. In my opening statement, I shared with you how proud I am of our staff and the work that they do, and that my hope was that by the time we finish this presentation, you'll also be proud of them as well. What we've accomplished could not have happened without your support, and the fact that you trusted us to deliver what you asked us to do. We still need your help during these times. I'm not unrealistic. We're going to take our share of the cuts. But we need your help to continue the momentum that have been gained in this agency so that we can move forward. We shared with you back in 2013 what we're doing with the Youth Reformation System. And you told us, go and implement it. We're not going to give you any more money, but utilize internal resources as population declines. And we tried to do that. You saw some of that yesterday, the result of the work that's happening within OIA. And again, oftentimes I remind our staff and myself that this is a system that cannot be successful with OIA alone. We do not do this work alone. We cannot. We, as some of our county partners noted, we are a pretty small slice of the system, an important part of the system because it's a deep end of the system, but there's no way that we could do this work by ourselves. We need our partners. We need our providers to be successful. This is a system that can only be successful holistically. So we have developed the tools and the analytics on the Youth Reformation System. You heard about some of that stuff yesterday. That work is just beginning. We have a whole lot of work to do. We also were directed by your budget note back in 2013.
You're sure reminding me a bunch of stuff.
Well, I want to tell you that when you ask us something, we do it. Hopefully you take notice of that. you told us to bring back a 10-year plan for facilities. We did do that. Tomorrow, hopefully, when you come to McLaren, you see that that work is progressing, and we are going to finish pretty close to our time frame and within the budget that you allotted us. The fact of really aligning the physical environment with our philosophical approach is pretty important, as Representative Williamson also noted. Last biennium, in 2015, you directed us to go back and look at the use of isolation. And you asked us to put safeguards in place so that we can change our practices and basically, you know, move the organization forward. We did that. Joe reported on that. We used our internal funding to create some skill development coordinators to go and model how we can make those changes. So, really, the ask here is not, you know, don't cut OI's budget. I'm here to support the governor's budget. And, again, I'm very realistic about the fact that the state faces a significant fiscal crisis, and we're going to have to take our share of it. My only hope is that we can maintain this momentum. I've worked in this system for 27 years. It is not often that you can see that you actually can get traction and move things forward in public agencies. And this organization, everything that's happened, naturally a lot of times the credit comes to me as the director. This work could not have happened without our staff, our representative staff. When we talk about data and analytics, I remember about 7 years ago when Dr. Myrick, who was here yesterday, came to me as a member of our research team and said, we have a research team here, but we're not using it the way we need to. And that was the trigger for us to begin going down this data and analytic path. And as I shared with you yesterday, I keenly remember back in 2008 when a list of six kids came to me to be sent to DOC. And that was the first time that I sent that list to research and said, tell me what would happen to these kids if we send them to DOC. And they said, we're going to increase their chance of recidivism by 138%. And I said, we're not going to do that. And that was the beginning of the path that we've started. We have a lot of work to do. By no means are we close to where we need to be. By no means are we close to where you want us to be. I know that. But we are on our way. And clearly, I am privileged to be serving this agency, the youth and the families, the community and the victims, and really serving you as a committee and the legislature. And I also want to give Joe an opportunity to say anything that he would like to say, even though he asked me to not ask him to say anything.
Just threw you under the bus, Mr. O'Leary.
Joe, do you have something that's burning in your heart to say?
Co-chairs, Winters, and Stark, and members of the subcommittee, I can't top what my boss just said.
Well, I want to thank you and your staff. It's not the openness of you, the commitment through these years. The challenge that you undertook, you know, we told you we weren't giving you any more money in 2013, that you had to do it, but without dollars. You've reported back very open and honestly, and it's been very refreshing to work with a director and staff that when we ask you the questions, that you get the answers and come back with us. We've seen, you know, the turnaround. We've seen what has been done over these years. I think I can speak for Rep. Bark and others who were part of this panel that, you know, said, do these things. Barker was here when we did the budget note. He was here in 2013 when we gave you a task without the dollars to do your task. So I really do want to commend you and the staff. Your management style and ability is, I've got to tell you, outstanding. I'm looking forward to the tour tomorrow along with others. And just to remind the others who are going on the tour tomorrow, we're to meet in the rotunda at 2:15 to depart from the Capitol. But, you know, truly, you know, I sometimes used to see you on Saturdays when you're burning off all of the stress and exercise down at courthouse.
And you haven't been showing up lately.
That's because I have another place that I'm going. But anyway, but no, honestly, it showed that the youth that have been in your care came first. You know, we often talk about the building, the mortar, and the analytics, but I just need to say that the young people who have been sent to you was your first priority, and I need to put that on record and say that. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other comments or questions? Well, with that, we are adjourned. See you tomorrow, those of you who are going on the tour. See you tomorrow, those of you who are going on the